Morning. It's Monday, June 15th. Today we're watching the White House lean into a brand of governance that looks a lot more like a private holding company than a public office. And we're checking in on the British political establishment as it hits a genuine breaking point. We've also got the latest on the AI sector's collision with reality, the shifting power dynamics in the NBA, and a look at why the looks-maxing trend is a fast track to nowhere. Let's get into it. The White House is using the Situation Room to strategize the containment of information regarding the Jeffrey Epstein files, and the administration has fast-tracked SpaceX into major market indexes, despite the company's ongoing net losses. This forces passive institutional investors, including the 401k portfolios of everyday people, to absorb the risk of a company that is essentially joined at the hip with federal contracts. When you combine this with the use of the White House for high-profile commercial events like UFC Freedom 250, you're looking at a governing style that treats the office as a platform for personal branding rather than public service. Honestly, it's a shitty situation for institutional integrity, but it's the new normal. Across the pond, the Makerfield by-election pits Andy Burnham, who is running with a Man of the People brand, against a struggling labor leadership. This race is a potential launchpad for a leadership challenge against Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. The resignation of Defense Secretary John Healey has only highlighted the pressure on the government. Healey quit over a £13.5 billion defense settlement, setting a high bar for future spending that traps any successor into making some truly difficult tax decisions. Meanwhile, Reform UK is drawing non-voters into the process, suggesting an erosion of the traditional Labour-Conservative binary. When you add in Burnham's campaign promises, like student loan relief, that the current budget likely can't support, you have a recipe for the same cycle of broken pledges that's currently weakening Starmer's government. It's a classic trap, and they're walking right into it. In the realm of international diplomacy, the G7 summit in France is seeing analysts grapple with the potential for a wider war involving Iran and its spillover into Lebanon. The leaders there are facing a dual mandate: stabilize global trade and de-escalate a conflict that has already strained alliances, particularly after U.S. criticism of Israeli strikes. What's interesting here is that influence is shifting away from traditional nation-states and toward large technology corporations. National security discussions are increasingly focusing on how to manage the systemic power of these private entities rather than just relying on state-to-state agreements. Domestically, the Australian political landscape is seeing a structural disruption, with the minor party One Nation polling ahead of both major parties. This is a sustained splintering of the traditional two-party system. Voters are moving toward populist platforms that claim broad appeal, effectively untethering themselves from the ideologies that have dominated the country's history. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, the removal of the slavery exhibit at the president's house has sparked a direct conflict between federal authority and local civic identity. The administration's executive order, titled Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History, aims to remove exhibits focused on systemic injustices. When federal workers pulled the 34 interpretive panels, they left a gap that local activists and tour guides immediately filled with makeshift materials. A federal judge has issued a temporary block on the order, but the Department of the Interior still plans to replace the original panels with sanitized versions. On the cultural front, there's a growing pushback against the total digitization of our lives. Across 26 states, new laws are putting cursive back into schools, based on the idea that handwriting helps with cognitive synthesis and provides a necessary break from screens. We're also seeing car manufacturers move away from touchscreen-only dashboards to return to physical buttons. It turns out that efficiency and effective cognition are not the same thing. Finally, in the world of sports, FIFA under President Gianni Infantino has completed its transformation into an aggressive commercial platform that prioritizes revenue over its traditional fan base. By expanding the World Cup to 48 teams and adopting American-style dynamic ticket pricing, FIFA is treating the sport as an asset to be liquidated. They're betting that U.S. disposable income will make up for a lack of deep-seated soccer culture, but early market resistance, like empty hotel blocks and ticket price corrections, suggests they might have miscalculated. The tech sector is currently grappling with a messy collision between runaway innovation and the hard reality of government oversight. First, let's look at Anthropic. The company recently faced a massive user backlash after attempting to implement silent guardrails, nerfing model responses without telling anyone, which forced them to reverse that policy within 24 hours. Users are realizing they have zero agency when a company can unilaterally change the behavior of the tools they're relying on. And the market is starting to treat these labs with a healthy dose of suspicion. It gets worse for the enterprise side. Some of Anthropic's models came with data retention policies that were non-starters for firms like Microsoft, who have started limiting employee access. The industry is shifting from seat-based pricing to usage-based pricing. But if these labs can't figure out how to play nice with standard corporate data governance, they're going to find themselves relegated to niche research tools. And then there's the token panic. Companies like Uber and Meta are capping AI consumption because the costs are getting out of hand. We are seeing a move away from token maxing, just throwing everything at the wall, toward a mandate for efficiency. The models that survive this won't necessarily be the ones with the flashiest output, but the ones that offer the highest reasoning density for the lowest cost. If you're looking for a silver lining, the 19% pop in the SpaceX IPO suggests investors are still hungry for growth. But the immediate future of the AI sector is going to be defined by who can navigate this regulatory minefield without losing the trust of their users. Switching gears to how this is hitting the ground in the workforce, recruitment is fundamentally broken. Traditional resume metrics are now effectively useless because software can optimize them so perfectly that they no longer reflect what a person can actually do. The strategy now is to stop looking for technical output and start hunting for judgment. The best candidates aren't the ones who can prompt an AI to write a perfect cover letter. They're the ones who know how to ask smart questions about business problems and understand the limitations of the tech. Agencies are also leaning heavily into global talent, not just for cheap labor, but for senior leadership roles. There is a dark side to this, though. We are looking at the potential death of the entry-level role. As AI eats up the grunt work, the traditional ladder for junior employees to learn the ropes is disappearing. The UFC recently held an event on the White House lawn. It marks a shift for a league that used to be a fringe curiosity. Now, it's a primary hub for corporate influence in Washington. Here's the thing. Live events have become the ultimate hedge for investors. In a world drowning in junk digital content and AI-generated noise, premium live experiences are the only things left with genuine scarcity. That's why TKO, the parent company of both UFC and WWE, is thriving on Wall Street, while the rest of the media sector is sweating. This move toward live dominance is creating some serious friction. Look at the ongoing beef between the NFL and Fox. Fox's valuation is tied to live NFL games, so as the league shifts toward streaming, Fox is reportedly using its DC influence to pressure regulators to revisit antitrust exemptions. It's a classic shakedown. Treat the threat of government intervention as a bargaining chip to keep the old broadcast model on life support. Moving over to soccer, the 2026 FIFA World Cup is being positioned as a turning point for the U.S. market. The numbers are big. We're talking about up to $2 billion in local economic activity for North Texas alone, but the real play is infrastructure. Dallas is prepping to host the International Broadcast Center and has invested millions to turn the region into a global hub. Speaking of the NBA, analysts are discussing the 2026 title race and the shift in league dynamics. The current collective bargaining agreement has made top-heavy, super-team rosters nearly impossible to sustain. Instead, we're seeing a shift toward deep, five-man rotations. The 2024 Celtics proved that even generational talents can be neutralized by high-volume team play. For the betting world, this means the old strategy of chasing favorites is basically obsolete. Parity is the new normal. The current obsession with looks maxing, that trend of extreme physical optimization, is turning into a trap. It's essentially trading your actual character for a curated aesthetic, where self-worth becomes entirely dependent on social media metrics and external validation. Which honestly is a shitty way to spend your finite time on Earth. The core issue here is that when you view your body as a trophy to be polished rather than a tool for functional life, you're not building strength, you're building anxiety. Seneca would have hated it, and he was right. If you're spending all your energy trying to hack your biology for a longer life without having any clue what you're doing with that extra time, you're just wasting it. Moving over to performance, the math is pretty simple. Tony Gonzalez recently broke down how he hit elite levels in the NFL, and it wasn't through some secret talent or genius insight. It was just sheer, high-volume repetition. You can't reach that level if you're grinding through it with forced discipline. You have to actually like the mechanics of the work. Finally, there's a framework floating around for building products that actually work. Proven, better, new. Stop trying to be a visionary. Find something that people already use, make it better, and add one thing that's actually new. Most founders fail because they're chasing ego-driven innovation instead of just solving a problem. If you're not willing to sweat the small, unglamorous details, you're probably just betting on hope. And hope, as they say, is not a strategy. A few other things worth knowing before you head out the door. First, engineers are finding that when you obsess over optimizing specific metrics, you're basically asking for a total system collapse. It's like painting over the low oil light on your dashboard. The car looks fine until it's a pile of scrap metal on the side of the highway. On a similar note, when we let charismatic amateurs run the show in new industries without any real oversight, things inevitably go south the second they hit a technical hurdle they can't talk their way out of. It's a classic case of prioritizing optics over actual infrastructure, and frankly, it's a recipe for disaster. Meanwhile, the conversation around Bitcoin is shifting. Regulators are moving away from treating it as just another speculative toy for day traders, and are starting to look at it as a potential strategic reserve asset. Whether that's a brilliant pivot or just institutional desperation remains to be seen. And finally, there's this idea of hyperopenia. Basically, the ego-driven need to be right at the expense of everyone else. When you prioritize supremacy over influence, you end up in a zero-sum loop that kills any chance of progress. It's a shitty way to run a community, or a relationship, for that matter. Anyway, that's the state of play. That's it for today. Keep your head on a swivel, and I'll see you back here tomorrow.